all across America and around the world. This is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
And welcome to Veterans Radio. I am Jim Fossone with VeteransRadio.net. We are recording today from the Legal Help for Veterans studio in Northville, Michigan. Legal Help for Veterans is a veterans disability law firm. You can reach us at 800-693-4800. We want to welcome to Veterans Radio today U.S. Army veteran Jenny Pakanowski. Jenny, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Well, this is, I think, maybe a first on Veterans Radio. I'm not sure we've had a poet on before, so we're glad to get sort of the creative look at some of these issues. So thanks for spending a little time with us.
I'm happy to.
Well, let's start with the basics. You grew up in the Bethlehem, Pennsylvania area. Your father was a Marine. And after a little bit of college, you said, you know what, I think I'm going to join the Army. And that was about 2003, I believe.
Yeah, that's generally true. I grew up in the Poconos, but I live in Bethlehem now. And my father was a Marine, and I definitely tried some college. I kind of wanted to go into the Marine Corps first, but he said to be smarter than him and go to college. So I gave it my most valiant effort, and it just wasn't for me. But then I had racked up about $40,000 in school loans with no degree. So I had to make the choice of what I was going to do next in my life, and I chose the Army.
When you were studying in college, what area were you headed towards? What did you want to do?
I had about 6 different interests. I started as a science major, biology, went to chemistry, went to teaching, went to undecided. It was a varying range of interests and trying to peg down exactly what I wanted to do.
Well, that's interesting because we're going to talk about what you do now, and it doesn't cover any of those areas. So I thought it'd be interesting to know. So you joined the Army about 2003. Tell us about your experiences in the U.S. Army.
So I joined and became a medic. My recruiter had mentioned that, you know, women don't go into war. I would be in like a hospital or something like that. So, you know, it was a more safe, it was presented as more of a safe option, but there are hospitals in Iraq and Afghanistan. So I was a little bit naive joining. And so from my training, basic training, AIT, excelled in the combat medic training. It was healthcare specialist combat medic training back then at Fort Sam. And then I got to Germany, and within a month, I was in Iraq by 2004.
And tell us a little bit, Jenny, about your tour of duty in Iraq.
I did medical support for convoys, so I was on the road a lot. I also did some 911 for the small bases or lake bases. Where we were on call if anything had happened on base. That was essentially I did convoys with medical support.
And you were there for just under a year, I believe.
Right, 11 and a half months. I came home on Christmas Eve to Germany.
Was this the experience you were anticipating, or did it take you by surprise, your time in Iraq?
It was pretty surprising. I mean, it was early, kind of early in the war, 2004. Our ambulances didn't have armor. They were green instead of tan. So it was just like an interesting reflection on what my role was and, you know, the idea of winning hearts and minds and being a healer, being a medic, and then actually the realization of what I was doing in the war, which was, you know, surviving in convoys, shooting back. And hoping that, you know, we could help people in need, like the people in the convoy, with IEDs, explosions, and small arms fire, and things like that.
Were you over there at it with a unit that had a number of other female soldiers, or were you somewhat isolated in that regards?
I was really, really lucky. I was in a medical evacuation unit, so over half of my company was females. So yeah, I just feel really lucky that I was able to be there with other female medics, go on convoys with them, and own female barracks, which were a secret on base on Al Asad when we lived there. So I felt pretty protected by my command as well as having the other female medics there.
And after the year or so in Iraq and you went back to Germany, how long did your remaining tour occur?
I ended up doing about a year and a half in Germany and then ended up in a legal battle with the Army about paying my student loans off. So I went to the reserves and came home to get some legal aid in helping me get my student loans paid off.
So you had mentioned at the outset that you were carrying about $40,000 of student loans. That was a motivator to join the Army. What did the recruiter tell you, and what did what came out of all of that?
You know, he said the thing. He said, yes, we're going to pay your student loans off. Here's all the paperwork. We got it checked by multiple, you know, people at METS, the Military Processing Center. So I thought I was, like, really smart. And I got all the, you know, pull in my paperwork that they found and decided that my loans were the wrong kind of loans, whatever that means.
Well, you know, these are good things to learn for others who are being told things by recruiters. What piece of advice would you give somebody who's being told a story by the recruiters?
I would say your best bet with dealing with recruiters is getting everything on paper and not believing the idea that, you know, if you don't sign up for a job in your contract that you'll actually get that job. And also, you know, worst case scenario in my case is even though it was in the contract, they still didn't fulfill it. So just like truth in recruiting, find out what you're really getting, definitely how you're covered, and have a really good support system when you're navigating the system if something goes wrong. Because I had my parents to help me process the legal aid.
Yeah, it's a very tricky process, and veteran radio listeners, we're talking to Jenny Pakanowski, who's an Army veteran. Jenny, you went in about 2003. When did you get discharged from the Army?
I started experiencing some significant PTSD symptoms, post-traumatic stress disorder symptoms, in 2006. So in 2000, my reserve unit released me, like medically. So that was really good.
Well, not the PTSD, but being released, I assume, is what you mean.
Yeah, so. That's exactly what I meant. Actually, I mean, I'm not... I guess I'm not happy that I have post-traumatic stress disorder, but it led me to my passion in life, to where I am. And if it hadn't happened the way it did, I don't know where I would be today. So it's kind of one of those questions, change what happened, because it brought me to who I am today.
That's right. And I think what you're telling us is to make sure we embrace the whatever that change is, good or bad, and keep moving forward, because you had a period that involved PTSD and depression, some addiction, some homelessness. I mean, that's can be a real toxic mess for a veteran reintegrating from the service. How long did you go through that period, and how did you get through that period?
Pretty early in, I think, or pretty late in 2006, I was heavily medicated by the VA, like 6 or 7 medications, and not trying each one of them individually, as I found out later. So if there are veterans listening, you know, trying one medication at a time is much more beneficial than starting 6 at once, because you're not sure which ones work and which ones you're having the side effects to. So if you wanted a little speech about medications, there it is. And then I was drinking continually to suppress the emotions, the feelings, the nightmares, from the convoys. And, I got myself into a pretty deep bottle where I was swimming around and, not really wanting to live, kind of hoping that the next pill or the next shot would kind of take me out. The first sign of light was I started fostering bull mastiffs, rehabilitating them in my home, helping a local rescue organization. So I was able to kind of use a little bit of my medical skills, kind of pull myself out of the fog, not drink so much, figure out what VA medications weren't, to focus on the dogs and the dog care.
It's really interesting because a lot of veterans do get into self-medication, which is just a downward spiral, but we often hear the story how getting involved in something else, something outside yourself, in this instance, getting involved with fostering bull mastiff dogs, sort of was a way to pull you out of being so self-focused, I suppose.
I think most of it is I had lost compassion for other human beings, as well as myself. Like, I wasn't proud of the things that I did. I wasn't happy with the Army because they, you know, in my viewpoint, they betrayed me by not fulfilling my contract. So I was going through a lot of different feelings and emotions, and there was no outlet for those, even though caring for the bull mastiffs was really great for me to start building back compassion. There was still no outlet for the pain, for the stories that were kind of stuck in my heart and in my head. So that's when the writing came in. That's when that really started to bring things alive for me.
Jenny, I see in some of your writings sort of the term disconnected from your emotions. Can you talk about that experience or those experiences a little bit and how writing and being creative helped reconnect?
Yeah, absolutely. The disconnection was definitely a form of survival. Like, if I feel everything that happened to me and all the emotions that are exactly opposite of how we were trained, you know, pain is weakness leaving the body. These neural pathways that we were trained in help fast of, like, I can't talk about how pain I'm in because that means I'm weak or that means I'm something else. So what I ended up doing was finding out about rituals of the past. Storytelling was integrated deeply into warrior cultures, the Greeks, the Romans, the Native Americans, and they would have these great rituals of coming home for their warriors, and how I relate to it is coming home from military service into civilian culture. So these warriors would come home and they would tell the stories of what happened to them. So they didn't have to hold it inside themselves anymore, and it wasn't a sign of weakness. It was a sign of courage to tell these stories so that the community would understand where you were and what you went through and possibly what you did for them. So there wasn't a disconnection there.
This is like PhD philosophy here, folks.
I guess I should have answered the question more directly.
No, this is good. I'm trying to, Jenny, I'm trying to figure out, how did you get yourself to evolve to the point of saying, hey, these historical rituals are something I need to immerse myself into so that I can tell my stories?
It started with going to my first writing workshop and someone asking me how I feel and what I think about my experiences. And I started writing them down. And without editing, without punctuation, without judgment, and with a kindness and compassion towards myself. Because if you're not kind and compassionate and not judgmental to yourself, it's really hard to get ideas and feelings out. So as I started facilitating, I created these spaces where it was like, you know, because no one dies when you open a period at the end of the sentence or you spell a word wrong. So it just starts with those simple ideas of, you know, just it's word vomit. Just get it all out on the paper. Stream of consciousness. There's all these words. There's all these millions of ideas. But free writes, like literally freedom in writing. And then you have a room of people sitting in that non-judgment, that kindness, compassion, and just listening without judgment. And how often do we actually get a room full of people together that are listening and not just waiting for their turn to talk?
And Jenny, what year was this that you got into this? And was the writer's class that you first went to for veterans or just for everybody in general?
Oh, good question. The first writing workshop I went to was veterans only. So similar experiences coming from similar places. So it was the first time, especially as a woman, that I was asked what I thought about my experiences in the war, how I felt about it. Because nobody had asked me that. People take me out to drink. People ask me dumb questions when they're drunk, like if I killed anybody. Even though I was a medic, which I thought was ironic. and finally someone was asking me a genuine question about what my experience was. It was refreshing. And then I could write it down and read it to a group of veterans that were essentially going through the same transitional problems that I was.
And do you think that the fact that it was a veterans-only group made the difference in walking into the room or made a difference in how the room reacted to you?
I do. I absolutely do. Right now I run groups primarily veterans-only, but that's only like to provide a leg up of like-minded, supportive people who understand the military experience. However, we're getting the veterans that have written to perform their pieces to the community, again, opening up that idea of ritual, of the community coming in and listening and being a witness and what I call fulfilling their civic duty from our service. Instead of, you know, support your troops or thank you for your service, I say, you know, supporting your veterans is listening to them, sitting in that seat and hearing about their experiences. An interesting event I have coming up, however, is I have a group in Conkanic at the Dietrich Theater in Pennsylvania, and we are going to an open mic, which is civilian writers and veteran writers that are going to be speaking their pieces together. So I'm always trying to bridge the gap, but definitely the first step in writing, in experiencing, telling your story, and having that community, creativity, and camaraderie, which is like my three main mission statements or mission goal, is sitting in a room with other veterans and being able to speak about your experiences. I think that's the baseline to get access to the creativity through the camaraderie of fellow veterans.
And I'll remind our veteran radio listeners that in talking to Jenny Pakanowski, when she outlined what she was going to study in college, none of it was creative writing or poetry or the creative sciences. It was all hard science. So I'm wondering, Jenny, as you look at this and say, where did I get this from? Was it always in there, or did your experiences in the Army sort of draw this creative energy out of you?
I think everyone has a story. I think it's within everyone. They just need the tools to write it, or they just need the group that's going to support them within writing it. So I guess the answer is I believe it's within everyone, including myself, and I was just able to access it after the war. I mean, I guess I was a very creative, expressive kid, you know, acting doesn't pay the bills, is what my dad told me.
Like
I was in a play when I was like 12.
That
you know?
Sounds like a Marine. That sounds like a Marine.
Yeah.
So let's
get
talk,
a real job.
Let's talk about some of the projects that you're currently working on or working with to assist veterans get their poetic, their creative writing stories out. So, one of them is Female Veterans Empowered to Transition. Tell us a little bit about FVET.
I founded about 2.5 years ago. There was no female veteran support group in at the time. So there was a huge gap, and I was working in New York City. But I lived in Bethlehem, and I had a need for female veterans to have a space where they could meet up, greet, eat, talk about the issues facing female veterans' rights and then lead to performing if that's what they wanted, or publication. So I created the group for not only myself but the other female veterans in my area.
And is there a way that people can keep track of what FVET is doing?
Yes, there's a Facebook page, Female Veterans Empowered to Transition, but I'm pretty sure if you just put FVET in, it comes right up because it's very direct.
So another group that you identified for me was One Fight Foundation. Can you talk about that?
Again, in the Lehigh Valley, where I live, they're a peer support group, essentially creating the peer support around suicide prevention. Isolation is the main killer of veterans, being that they're isolated, so they have more options. So they started a peer support group. As well as kind of community theater and some of the contacts that I have in New York City, they would come and perform, and we would create plays and all kinds of stuff, as well as the writing and performance. So it really opened up.
And then finally, you mentioned Arts Quest. Tell us a little bit about that.
So there's a beautiful place where Bethlehem Steel used to be, and it's called the Steel Sex. But at the bottom of the steel stacks, literally the steel stacks that made steel, is a beautiful place called Arts Quest, where we will be doing writing workshops for veterans Memorial Day weekend. It's Saturday, May 26th from 2 to 4. There will be two separate workshops going, one for vets only and one for family members only. I didn't want their voice to be continually ignored or silenced. So I'm starting to develop programs that include the family members to have their own writing workshops, because they have so much to say and so much that they're dealing with, and they have their stories. Just, you know, I'm really into stories. and keeping that inside themselves is also a detriment to their health and their family. So we developed that. And then at night from 5:30 to 7, there will be a veteran presentation of the veterans telling their stories in relation to Memorial Day.
Well, I think you've identified the power that comes from writing and being creative, and certainly your focus on camaraderie, creativity, and community for veterans, whether they be female veterans or all veterans, really is important. Now, I've gone through this whole interview without asking you to recite a poem, and I won't do that unless you have one that you're right at your fingertips that you otherwise want to give. But as we close out, can you tell folks how to keep track of what you're doing in the creative writing and poetry space?
Yeah, it's easy. Usually you can just Google my name, Jenny Pakanowski, but I also have a website called JennyWarriorPoet.com that has accessibility to my events and the other things I'm doing. Or just, email me and I can fill you in on what's going on. And I have a connection to a lot of other veteran organizations. So if it's not necessarily something in my area, I might be able to connect you with something in your area.
Well, we want to thank you for taking some time to talk on Veterans Radio today and give folks your wisdom gained over the years, and certainly to encourage people to maybe let loose some creative juices that they didn't know they had that will assist them in getting a little more connected to their emotions and getting over some of their other experiences. Thanks for taking time with us today, Jenny.
No problem. Thanks for having me, Jim.
And I want to thank everybody for listening to Veterans Radio today. I am Jim Fossone. It's been a pleasure to be your host. I'm a veterans disability lawyer at Legal Help for Veterans, and you can reach us at 800-693-4800 or legalhelpforveterans.com on the web. You can follow Veterans Radio on Facebook and listen to its podcasts and internet radio shows by going to veteransradio.net. And until next time, you are dismissed.
If you have a VA claim denied by the Board of Veterans' Appeals, contact Legal Help for Veterans at 1-800-693-4800. They're experts in handling cases before the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims. Their number again, 1-800-693-4800.